Welcome to CPAC Today in Politics. Coming up, flooding in several provinces brings the climate change debate into sharp focus.
In the midst of a crisis where we're trying to save lives and property and keep people safe, I'm not going to get into a partisan argument, but I think we all have to learn the lessons of climate change. The impacts here are powerful and dangerous and damaging.
Japan's Prime Minister visits Ottawa to discuss trade and the ties between our two countries.
We've seen significant investments in energy, in AI, from Japan into Canada, which is continuing to grow our economies and benefit our citizens. We look forward to many more announcements of tremendous cooperation and collaboration for the benefit of our citizens between Japan and Canada.
And the House of Commons resumes today as the countdown continues to the federal election.
In broad terms, what to watch for is a fine-tuning of the campaign narratives and a laying of the track for that long journey up to the election.
It's Monday, April 29th. I'm Mark Sutcliffe. Let's get right to the top political stories this morning. I'm joined by Peter Van Dusen, CPAC's executive producer and the host of Primetime Politics. Good morning, Peter.
Morning, Mark.
We saw members of Parliament and even the Prime Minister going to some of the flooded areas in eastern Ontario. There are other places, of course, New Brunswick and Quebec as well, that have been affected by flooding. While the focus obviously is on the urgent situation for many homeowners, this is going to feed into the debate that we're having in this country about climate change and how to handle it, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think there's any way to avoid that. Every time we have these, to varying degrees, these natural disasters, I think people immediately want to look for reasons why. And I think there's lots of evidence to suggest that that there's a role being played by climate change here, I think. And when there's a critical mass, Mark, in different parts of the country of human tragedy stories about what homeowners are facing here, I think it kind of galvanizes the country. Even if you're not affected, you're looking at the hardships these people are facing, and you're seeing anytime you can attach a human story to a debate that sometimes is inflamed by political rhetoric, that really brings it down to the people. And a lot of people in the part of the country we're in, here in the National Capital Region, we've seen this for 2 out of the last 3 years. We've seen the kind of challenges people face with flooding attributed largely to climate change. And this will inform the debate, and we're seeing it already. Politicians are getting involved. I think it puts pressure on governments at all levels to talk about what it is they're prepared to do for these homeowners, to protect these homeowners, and we've heard some discussion around that, compensating homeowners. And at the federal level as well, it will, I think, refocus the conversation as parliamentarians get back to work around the whole issue of climate change and who's got a plan, who doesn't have a plan, who's got a better plan, competing plans. But I think this is the natural flow of this, is that we'll get into a conversation and a deeper conversation about this issue of climate change, carbon taxes, and all of that as we get into the last 5-plus months before we have an election campaign.
Do you think it puts pressure on Andrew Scheer to have a plan in this area? He's opposed to carbon pricing, but he hasn't proposed an alternative to it. So is the next move his on this issue?
I think a lot of the questions will be for Andrew Scheer. You're seeing that already today. The Liberals have turned the focus around on Andrew Scheer, and for a couple of reasons. Andrew Scheer is now saying in the last couple of days, Mark, that look, I'll have what I think will be a better plan for the climate than the Liberals do, and I'll unveil that in June before the summer. But he's also, we know that he, was involved in conversations with oil company executives in the last little while, earlier this month, talking about political campaigns and policies behind closed doors with oil company executives. So I think there is going to be increasing pressure on Andrew Scheer to say, well, what would you be doing? What would you be doing? Look at the images on television, look at flooded homes, look at flooded streets, look at flooded communities, and what are you going to do about it? So I think this will ratchet up the conversation in Parliament for sure.
All right, let's turn to the visit of the Prime Minister of Japan, Shinzo Abe, who has been in the United States already and is spending time now with the Prime Minister of Canada, Justin Trudeau. And, of course, they are highlighting the trade relationship between the two countries at a time when lots of trade deals are under scrutiny, if not being torn up or threatened to be torn up. So, obviously, the government wants to highlight this relationship because it's one of the ones that's working.
Yeah, fair enough, and why not? I mean, you have to put something good in the window for Canadians and say, look, yeah, we have an ongoing tariff dispute with the United States. We have an ongoing diplomatic dispute that has resulted in a trade fight, has morphed into a trade fight with the Chinese. So yeah, let's look over here. Forget what's happening over here. Look over here, where with China we have. We have a reworked Trans-Pacific partnership that's paying off. It's increasing trade between both countries. So there is something good happening, but it can't shake people from the fact that there is this ongoing fight with the two countries that really matter. Not that Japan doesn't, but two countries that really matter: the United States and China. And the slow progress is being made there. And we have a new trade deal with the Americans and Mexico, but of course. There's no indication that that's about to be ratified quickly. The Americans are—it's tied up in the legislative process down there, and it's—the Canadian government is saying, "Look, as long as we have steel tariffs hanging over our heads from the Americans on steel and aluminum, it's going to be difficult to make a case for ratification of a new trade deal in the Canadian Parliament too." So that's what this was all about. This was a chance to say, look at the relationship here with Canada and Japan. We do have something good going on, notwithstanding the problems we have with the Chinese and the United States.
Parliament resumes today, and on the weekend, Jagmeet Singh was talking in a televised interview about advancing a progressive agenda in the weeks ahead. And obviously, for the NDP leader, he is fighting not just for some of these issues, but also for relevance in what some people might already be observing as a two-way race in terms of who's going to be forming a government after the October election. So Jagmeet Singh really needs to get on the map here a little bit, doesn't he?
Yeah, and he needs to get in the heads of Canadians too. He needs to be a figure that Canadians want to know more about or are being told more about. And I think you've seen a two-step sort of approach to that in the last couple of weeks. We've seen the release of his memoir, which doesn't touch a whole lot on politics, Mark. It talks about his personal life. He was a victim of sexual assault when he was a young boy in a martial arts class. He was bullied. His father was an alcoholic. He writes about that. And I think that's an important step along the way for Canadians who still don't know a lot about Jagmeet Singh. This is at least a chance to say, okay, here are the life experiences that have marked this politician, and take what you will from it. But, job one, who is Jagmeet Singh? And New Democrats need to answer that question for Canadians. So I think that's the idea behind the publishing of his memoirs. And then secondly, he's got to carve out a space. He's got to find a place where, not just progressives, but more than progressives. He's fighting over the progressive audience with the Liberals and certainly with the Greens as well. And most of the recent polling show the Greens are right, nipping at the heels of New Democrats and in some of these national polls. So relevance is the big issue for Jagmeet Singh. What can he talk about that makes Canadians go, you know what, I'm going to give this guy a look. I'm going to investigate further. I want to know more about their policies, because I'm not satisfied with what I'm hearing from Justin Trudeau and don't like what I'm hearing from Andrew Scheer. And he's got to really do that, because I think that the challenge in the election campaign for New Democrats is going to be if it's clearly a race where Canadians are going to be given a choice between Andrew Scheer and Conservatives and Justin Trudeau and the Liberals again. This is the problem the Democrats had in the last election. If it's about making sure somebody other than Andrew Scheer gets elected, that's bad news for the Democrats. And if there's going to be a spin-off vote that goes to somebody other than Conservatives and Liberals, maybe people are taking a closer look at the Greens, and that, yeah. That again is bad news for the Democrats.
What else is there to watch for today and in the days ahead as we count down to the end of this parliamentary session, which will be the final, we're down to the final couple of months now for Parliament sitting before we break for the summer and then the federal election campaign. So it's down to the final strokes.
Yeah, I think, you know, in broad terms, what to watch for is a fine-tuning of the campaign narratives and a laying of the track for the for that long journey up to the election. Well, it's not that long, less than 6 months away, but, you know, the laying of track for these political narratives, and I think you'll see that as much as the parties can in Parliament, they'll start going at very heavily at the issues that they want to put before Canadians that set the parties apart and start having Canadians start to think about choices. Because, of course, you know, Parliament's the place where you see the politicians in action, short of an election campaign where they're in your face, of course, every day for somewhere between 36 and 46 or 47 days. So Parliament's the chance to do that. And you mentioned less than a couple of months now, mid-June, when they will recess, and then they won't be coming back before we get an election campaign. There's still some more break weeks in there as well, Mark. So this is the chance, and it'll start today in the House of Commons. You'll start seeing a fine-tuning of the message about what's on offer for Canadians over the next couple of months.
All right. We are into the final 6 months before the federal election. It's going to get very interesting. Peter, thanks so much for joining us today.
Okay, Mark, we'll talk again.
That's CPAC's Peter Van Dusen. Now let's look at what political columnists and commentators are writing about today. In the Toronto Star, Jamie Watt argues the wave of conservative victories across the country is turning into a tsunami. Watt writes, "For those keeping count of such things, we have five straight conservative victories across the country. In four of them, the Liberal vote share dropped to the lowest levels seen since Confederation. Today, 82% of Canadians are governed by conservative parties. By any measure, it is a startling rebuke that 6 months out from the federal election is no doubt weighing heavily on Liberals everywhere." In Maclean's, Philippe J. Fournier considers a merger between the NDP and the Green Party. Fournier writes, "A new 338 Canada analysis shows such a merger would hold the balance of power in a minority government after the next election, and we have witnessed recent examples of successful party mergers. Jason Kenney will soon be sworn in as Alberta Premier under the United Conservative banner. On the federal scene, the 2003 merger of the Progressive Conservatives and the Canadian Alliance was not an immediate success, but it won power in 2006, and Stephen Harper remained Prime Minister until 2015. In the Globe and Mail, Doug Saunders argues Canadian extremists returning from Syria are ultimately our problem. Saunders writes, "Almost all the Canadians accused are Canadian citizens born here, and their radicalization took place here, in the dark corners of Canadian society. To attempt to dump them on another country would be both immoral and dangerous. Some of them may be the world's worst people, but they are our people. If they are truly to be brought to justice, or at least kept under watch so they pose less danger, it is far more likely to happen here." Here's what's coming up on Canada's political agenda. The Prime Minister will start the day in Montreal, where he will speak at the 2019 Construction Summit. Later in Cambridge, Ontario, he will make an announcement at the Toyota Motor Manufacturing Canada plant. Environment Minister Catherine McKenna and Finance Minister Bill Morneau will speak with the media in Ottawa. Infrastructure Minister François-Philippe Champagne will speak in Ottawa about the Climate Action Incentive Payment. Border Security Minister Bill Blair will be in Toronto to announce funding for the province of Ontario to counter drug-impaired driving. In St. John, New Brunswick, Defense Minister Harjit Sajjan and Health Minister Jeanette Petipa-Taylor will visit areas affected by flooding. Agriculture Minister Marie-Claude Bibeau will make a funding announcement in St. Albert, Ontario. And in Saint-Joseph-de-la-Rive, Quebec, National Revenue Minister Diane Leboutillier will make an announcement about the national shipbuilding strategy. And that's CPAC Today in Politics for Monday, April 29th. Tune into Primetime Politics tonight on CPAC for coverage of all the day's events. Our podcast returns tomorrow morning. Have a great day.